you are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
You are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of Treasury Cast, the show that celebrates the greatest comics format of all time, the Treasury Edition. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Rob Kelly. And joining us this month to talk about Marvel Treasury Edition number 23, starring Conan the Barbarian, is my returning guest and pal, Dallin Baumgarten. Hi, Dallin. Welcome back.
Salutations, sir. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here again. It's great. This is your, I think, third appearance on Treasury Cast, is that right? Right, I think we did Defenders.
I believe
we did Howard the Duck.
I was told there'd be no math, but that was one of the conditions of coming on. I think it has been three times.
All right, fantastic. That's great. So I'm excited to talk about this Conan the Barbarian Treasury. As I mentioned, it's Marvel Treasury Edition number 23. By the way, Happy New Year. A little belated, but Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Yeah, and Happy New Year to everybody listening. This is, of course, our first show of 2024. So before we get to this book in particular, Dallin, I want to find out from you. Now, I know you're into Conan now because I follow you on Twitter and you are buying lots of issues of Savage Sword of Conan, the black and white magazine. I'm seeing your scores that you're doing at the various comic shops that you're visiting. So I know you're into it now, but as a kid, were you into Conan?
Even as a kid, I was sort of into Conan in the same way that I am now, in that I always liked Conan, but it was just something I would pick up when other superhero books were a little light that week or that month, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would pick them up here or there, but it wasn't one of the books that I had to buy month in and month out. If I saw a great issue, I would grab it, and I always enjoyed him. But I've always gone through phases. I never stopped loving Conan, but sometimes I just love him, and then other times I'm a little bit obsessed. And I must admit that I started picking up more and more of, over the last few years, of the Marvel black and white magazines from the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And the more I got into them in general, the more I was buying the Savage Sword of Conan back issues and just thinking like, what was I doing? Like, I should have been, you know, I should have had more of these all along. And, I mean, I think I only have, you know, maybe 50 total, but you know, that was a long run, but yeah, I was already kind of getting back into them. And then when Titan Comics relaunched their new Conan book, and they had a free comic book day issue that was great. The writing was great. The art was great. And that really just stoked it into, you know, an extra gear. And I'm all about the Sumerian these days.
I know, I remembered reading, you know, years and years and years ago, it had to be an interview with Larry Hama, where he said that for a little while there, Savage Sword of Conan was Marvel's most profitable book because it sold really well. B, it sold to a wider and different audience than anything else in the Marvel line. It sold to adult men as opposed to kids. And because of its higher price point, it got more return. And so the Marvel had that huge line of black and white magazines in the 70s. I mean, it exploded. They went from basically none of them to like 20 titles in a very short period of time. And then, of course, as the 70s rolled on, they all faded away. Dracula and Tales of the Zombie and all that, they all eventually got canceled. The only one left standing was Savage Sword of Conan, which ran well into like the 90s. And so it's sort of funny that Marvel had one black and white magazine. That's it. That was the one they did. And they tried other things in the 80s, like Freddy Krueger had his own black and white magazine, and they brought Savage Tales back a little, and Punisher got his own very briefly, but none of them lasted. And Conan just kept chugging along.
It's crazy that, I mean, they really set a tone with the monthly, well, monthly and or bi-monthly, you know, single issues, and they just kept that momentum going. I was reading that, as I'm sure you know, it started as Savage Tales, but that morphed into Savage Sword, and Savage Tales went away. But Martin Goodman did not want to do anything Black and White magazine, and that was Stan that rammed that through. But then, for various reasons, they got the one issue out, they put the kibosh on it, and it was another 2 years, I think, before Savage Tales number two came out, and they were reworking it and coming up with different ideas, and that's, you know, so it morphed into Savage Sword. But yeah, it getting the Black and Whites out wasn't so easy initially.
And like you said, I didn't buy Conan regularly, but it was a great drop-in book because it was
Yeah.
generally every issue was its own adventure. So it was the kind of thing where you could, if you had an extra 40 cents, you could buy an issue of Conan and get a complete story for the most part. Roy Thomas had some extended, you know, continued storylines, but for the most part, you could pick up an issue of Conan and get a complete Conan adventure and you were satisfied. You know, it's like, okay, he's going to meet a really beautiful babe and he's going to fight a wizard and there's going to be a monster. Like, you kind of know what it was. And
Yeah, like
that's,
going to get
yes,
a shake and a burger at Johnny Rockets. You know
exactly. It's
what you're
repetitive, but
going
it's
into.
also comforting, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and such a great. I know it was expensive in at the time, but we didn't know how good we had it when you could put out. You know, you could get a black. I mean, as a kid, I was, you know, I was biased towards color comics. You know, I just was, but the stories. The level of the artistry and the fact that they could tell a longer story and the fun backups, you know, and it was such a great deal for the money.
Absolutely. And yeah, part of the reason, everybody, that we're kind of going on and on about Savage Sword of Conan, because this is, of course, Treasury Cast, is because this book reprints a story from Savage Sword of Conan, Savage Sword of Conan number five, to be precise, which means this is the first time this story appears in color. And they even have that little blurb right on the cover. It says first time in color. And it features another kind of special feature, which we'll get to that in a minute. Before we talk about any of that, let's talk about the cover. It's by John Buscema, excuse me, and Joe Sinnott. And it features Conan raging into the heavens with, yes, of course, a beautiful woman down by the ground, kind of in a Boris Vallejo sort of pose a little bit. So, what do you think of this as a cover?
It's certainly eye-catching. I think it does what it needs to do. There's nothing super special about it, I don't think, but I mean, it tells you what it's all about. Conan is bare-chested. He's, you know, he's flexing. He's up on a, you know, he's up on a rock. It tells you what this is going to be. And yeah, there's nothing like super slick about this cover, you know, layout-wise, but got the right color, it's got the right eye-catching flames going on. Yeah, I think it works.
Yeah, by the this is of course near kind of the final half year of Marvel Treasury Edition, and by this point, Marvel had turned over this book entirely, basically to three characters: Spider-Man, Hulk, and Conan. That they were just sort of
Yeah.
just. I mean, it was like for you'd get a Spider-Man, and then maybe like another Spider-Man, and then a Hulk and a Spider-Man, and then a Conan, and then another Spider-Man. Like, you know, they just were like these are their big three characters, and of course, this is long before the movie. I know that
Oh
the
yeah.
movie had been in development, so maybe, you know, I guess Conan sold well and Savage Sword of Conan. So, I mean, I would guess again, if Savage Sword was selling well at a higher price point, you can imagine that the Treasury Edition maybe did well too. So this first story, and as I mentioned, it's from Savage Sword of Conan number five, so it's long form. It's like about a 50-page story. It's called A Witch Shall Be Born. It's by Roy Thomas, John Buscema again, and the inker is Tony DeZuniga. So a lot happens in the story, but I boiled down the plot as much as I could, everybody. So the queen of Kahuran, named Tamaris, awakens from a terrible nightmare, only to be met with the glowing visage of Salome, whom Tamaris was told died in birth. Salome explains that because she bore the birthmark of a witch, her parents condemned her to die by exposure. But Salome was rescued by a magician who carried her far away. With the help of a brute named Constantine Titus, Sorry, everybody. Salome banishes Tamaris to a prison and assumes control of her kingdom. She disbands the Karun army, which causes a stir, especially with its captain, Conan the Barbarian. A battle, of course, ensues, but Conan is overwhelmed and placed on a crucifix, left to die. With the help of some others who are dismayed at Tamaris' seemingly heel turn, he survives the crucifixion and escapes. Under Salome's rule, Kahuran becomes a den of iniquity, where the poor and powerless are subjected to all manner of cruelty. Eventually, Conan regroups and discovers the real Tamaris imprisoned. Salome consults dark magic to help her retain power, ending with Conan facing off against a monstrous beast on the steps of the palace. Salome falls to her death. Conan kills the beast, and eventually our hero places Constantitus on that self-same crucifix, leaving him to die. Okay, Dallin.
That was well done.
Thank
well
you. Done. Thank you. Again, it's there's a lot here because, as I said, it's about a 50-page story. And yeah, it's kind of funny. It's like if you don't know that it's reprinted from Savage Sword of Conan, you would – well, no, actually, let me reverse that. You know, once you find out that it's reprinted from Savage Sword of Conan, the story makes a little more sense in that it's got a little more sex and a little more violence. The violence is a little more graphic. The sex is a little more explicit. And that's because they could get away with that stuff in the black and white magazine, not in the color comic. So it always – I remember being a kid and I would occasionally get a Savage Sword and I just was like, okay, because it's, you know, the girls were like topless sometimes, or the violence was just a little more gruesome, and that's what we get here. So, but overall, what did you think of this story?
It's a great story. It's definitely engaging. It's a strange story in structure, and there's a few different reasons for that. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a great story, and it's got some very memorable little bits and pieces along the way. But I will say this, and having read a lot of Savage Sword of Conan issues, quite a few over the last year, this particular story, it's pretty brutal. Mm-hmm. even for a Conan story. You know, as they were doing the monthly comic, you know, I'm sure they kind of got into a vibe and a flow, and you know, the Savage Sword magazine had its own different vibe and flow, but this one's a little extra edgy, I think. That's my opinion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It, of course, it features the cover of Savage Sword of Conan is by Boris Vallejo, and it features Conan on the crucifix, which is one of like the great Conan images in all of the history of the character. They reproduced it in the movie. And so this was something that kind of like
That cover was started by John Buscema.
Oh, really?
And he did the layouts in pencil. He started it. At some point, he abandoned it, and Vallejo took over.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, that's interesting.
Which is very strange. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't expect it.
Yeah, you would think that you would. Of course, Vallejo was expensive. You think that, you know, they would have called him in from the very, very beginning. But that's like that. If you're a Conan fan, like in terms of you've read the books, that's a big moment in his, you know, air quotes, career. And so here is Roy Thomas. Yeah, right. And here's Roy Thomas finally getting to it in one of these stories. And they don't shy away from the explicitness of it. I mean, he gets crucified. The vultures are coming. They're circling. One of them gets too close. Conan bites into its neck and tears its head off, and it falls to his feet, and that scares off the other vultures. And then when these other guys come by to help rescue him, like they're pulling the nails out of his palms, and you see it up close, and then he has to like rip the nails out of his feet. I mean, it's pretty grotesque. Again, even for a Conan story, but it's one of the big moments of Conan adventures.
And before Conan even gets a chance to really be heroic in this issue, in this story, you know, there's a what we can only assume is a rape that happens.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of torture, you know. That's one of the strange things about this story, that the original prose story, Howard's story, is beloved, but it's also, people say that there strangely wasn't enough Conan in it. So when they adapted it for Savage Sword, they did make some changes. I think they even made Conan take the place of some other characters in the story. Just they put Conan in it more than he was, originally. And the first time we see Conan in the story, it's a flashback, so he doesn't even just come charging into the story right away. And then when we first really come into present moment with Conan, he's on that cross, and it's very shocking.
Right at the very beginning. By the way, I didn't mention in the story synopsis is the reason that Salome gets revenge on Tamaris is because they are sisters. They are twin sisters, but it's because Salome has the mark of the witch. She's carried away as she's evil, and of course she wants revenge on her sister, which is how she's able to replace Tamaris, is because she looks exactly the same, so nobody notices the difference. But in this opening sequence where she gets the drop on Tamaris and she introduces the instrument of her revenge, which is this Constantitis guy. I love that when she's like, he's basically going to be the instrument of my revenge. And she says it's because he possesses none of the good characteristics that even that men call good. And I love that Constantitis goes,
Yes.
"I am overwhelmed, my princess." And I'm like, did they
Yes.
invent sarcasm? Was sarcasm invented yet? I didn't even thought that was funny that he's kind of like,
Oh, man.
thanks, Salome. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite quotes in the whole story. His utter lack of all characteristics that men call good.
I'm
That's
like,
fantastic.
okay. So yeah,
Well,
and
the
then
start, I mean, when the story starts, they sucked me in immediately because there's floating heads.
okay.
Are you a floating head fan?
It depends. Depends how it's
Whether,
done
I mean, whether it's
sometimes.
on covers or the opening splash page or just, thrown into a Doctor Strange tale, I love the floating heads. And it's really
Okay.
creepy. It's creepy the way we are introduced to her sorcerer sister. I really dig that.
I think I like
And
the
then,
floating heads in the story, not on a cover. I think on a cover that bugs me a little, but
oh, you don't like
inside the
them on the
story, I think
cover,
it's
huh?
like, yeah, I don't know. It depends. It depends.
Yeah, did you? I mean, I'm sure like a lot of people, I learned a lot about grammar reading Marvel Comics and
Oh,
DC
yeah.
Comics when I was a kid. Well, I guess I'm never too old because on the second page of the story, I guess it's technically the first page of the story, but I learned something about grammar.
Yes.
She says, Tamara says, her scream is loud and long, and let's see, suddenly from a nightmare. Wait, no, that's not the right spot. The first thing one notes is that her golden candelabra have gone out. Now, I did not know that candelabra was plural for candelabra. Right? I
Okay.
thought, is that a typo? Candelabras? Candelabra? So I looked it up, and guess what? Candelabra is plural for candelabrum, which is the correct term.
Okay.
Strictly speaking, the Latin word candelabrum, a multiple candle holder, is singular, with candelabra as its plural. So I've been using candelabra wrong for many, many years.
How often does that word come up?
Oh, all the time.
Okay, all
Yeah,
right.
if your wife likes candles as much as, no, I'm just kidding.
All
But
right.
it's a great word, but so
Hey.
I did learn a little something.
Roy Thomas could be very florid, even in these Conan stories.
Right?
I love on the opening splash page two, what's the chapter four, a letter to Remedia. First of all, I love that it's told from, it's a letter written by this Astrides guy. And so the whole thing is written as if it not only is it his from his point of view, it's written as if he's writing the captions. So they are lowercase letters, which is not the standard in comic books. Everything's
No,
always
it is
uppercase.
not.
And it when you see it in lowercase, it just looks weird. It just looks odd. You're like, wow, what am I? What is this? What's the problem with it? And I realize, oh, I'm looking at undercase, lowercase letters. And I thought that's a nice little detail. But I love that they're trying to suggest, under Salome's rule, this place has become just a complete and utter, again, like I said in the synopsis, the den of iniquity. And of course, they can't go, even in Savage Sword of Conan, they can't go too far. But so they have like this kind of orgy sequence where it's you know, men and women, and they're kind of like laying all over each other, and they're clearly kind of in various states of undress. But I love that there's one guy in the foreground just pouring a goblet of wine on a woman's chest, which is, I don't know, is that appealing to anybody? Like, that's what is that doing?
Well, I guess it's a waste of wine, I guess, unless you're gonna lick it back up. But it's a PG show, so yeah.
I just feel it's a stand-in for something. Is all I'm saying.
Well, when this magazine started, they definitely wanted to exploit that more adult angle. The very first issue of Savage Tales, they have a severed head.
Mm-hmm.
There's no blood, but there's a severed head. And then on this, I think it's the very next issue that came out a few years later, they had a naked woman from behind,
mm-hmm.
and they balked, and they put some smoke over her naked behind.
Okay.
So they're always riding that line. Even there, you know, they want to push it, but they don't even stand and want to push it too far. So they're all clothed to some extent.
I always wondered about too, that none of the Marvel Treasury editions feature the Comics Code stamp, which is interesting to me. I wonder why they don't. I mean, why wouldn't they have to be approved? Because I'm thinking if they're reprinting something from Savage Sword of Conan, this material would not pass muster in the regular Conan comic book. But yet it does in a Marvel Treasury. And I'm like, well, what is it about the Marvel Treasury? Like,
I think
why?
Just because it's magazine sized or bigger.
I guess so. Is that it? Like, I guess that's the.
I mean, they got away from the Comics Code by doing a magazine sized, you know, periodical. It's not on the spinner rack. I mean, that's a huge part of it. They just, it's not a comic book. It's a magazine. And I think if you just extrapolate that to the Treasury edition, all the more you can skirt around that.
Maybe so. I mean, as a kid, first of all, most of the places I shopped for comics as a kid, 7-Elevens, they didn't even carry the Marvel magazines. And
yeah,
the ones that did, they would stack the Conans with like not Playboy, but like kind of heavy metal. Yeah, like maybe even like the biker magazines. Like they were just they were more likely to be with the men's quote unquote men's magazines than they were likely to be next to the comic book. So yeah, that's it seems like such a distinction without a difference. But I guess it did make a difference because famously that's how Mad Magazine got around it, was that we're a magazine, we're not a comic book. They're like, well, okay, it's really just paper size that we're talking about here. It's really not that big of a deal.
But it's paper size, which forces a different store placement, which I guess makes all the difference.
I guess so. So
Caption boxes that you were talking about with the lowercase.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean, a lot of them were caption boxes, but when we see the letter that he's writing, they're pointing to the letter.
Mm-hmm.
What would you call that? It's not a word balloon. It's almost like a literary caption box or something. It's kind of strange because when they're showing you what's being written about, they're just caption boxes. But when we see the man writing, the caption box has a tail that points at the piece of paper where he's writing, which I thought was kind of cool. And then they take it to the extreme because in the last panel on page 25, he's already sent the letter off on Carrier Pigeon. And we're still reading the letter, and it's pointing at the bird. It's so funny. It's so cute.
I guess
the bird is flying away, and the caption boxes are pointing at the letter in his feet.
I guess it's so rarely used that they just never came up with a term for it. You know, I mean,
there's only
so many times it's ever been done.
Not quite like that.
Yeah. It's a nice effect, and it's nice to change up the story a little bit. I love... John Buscema drawing Conan, which is right over the plate. It's everything that he loved to do. I love this giant bug-eyed monster that Conan takes on at the end. It's, you know, it's one of those things where you're like, it's hideous and disgusting. And because it's so grotesque, it's okay that Conan drop violence on the thing that, again, he wouldn't be able to get away with him. Like, he stabs it in the eye at one point, you know? And so it's like, again, in a regular Conan comic, he probably couldn't be quite that explicit, but because the thing is so horrific and grotesque, it's kind of okay for Conan to,
do that. He's killed a lot of bears and apes too, though.
Well, that is true. That is true. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. He's wrestling a bear in the other Conan treasury on the cover of that one. So,
yeah.
And then you got this grim ending where he puts Constantius on the cross and leaves him to die and crucified. It's like, do not cross Conan the Barbarian.
No. When Conan was on the cross, there's several pages. It is really a pretty gripping sequence because we see a lot of his expressions. And I mean, it's not enough that he's being crucified. He's also hungover from the night before.
Right.
So you can see it in his face and he's sweating and so forth. So they give us a little bit of that in that last page when he finally gets his revenge. We see that close up of the face there in red. It's pretty fun.
It's a great story. It's really fun. And again, it's nice to read something so long form. It's 55 pages, which is, again, extraordinary. And, it always makes you wonder, like, these old guys, like the Jack Kirby's and the Dick Dillons and the Kurt Swans and the John Buscema's, was there no upper limit to how many pages they could crank out in a month? Because this, I mean, I know that Savage Sword wasn't a monthly comic, but this is 55 pages. That is,
and they were doing monthly comics.
Right. On top, right. It wasn't like this is the only thing John Buscema did. So, like, God, how many pages could, I mean, I know he's not inking it. So maybe he left looser pencils for Tony. And you see a lot of Tony DeZuniga here in the final artwork. But still, 55 pages is basically two full monthly comics. And plus, he was drawing Conan. Plus, he was doing what other stuff Marvel needed him to do. And it's like, God, these old guys were just war horses, just warriors. Yeah. They could crank this stuff out. So it's just, again, it's really
It's funny that you mentioned DeZuniga, though, because on page one, it tells us Art, John Buscema, and the Tribe.
Well, that's so true. That's right. Yeah. So there's probably a lot of anchors on this.
There was more than one. Yeah. More than one anchor on this. But even if they're putting it out every 2 months, they'd get behind the eight ball here and there, I'm sure. They'd have to bring in some extra hands.
Extra hands, yeah. The famous anchor, M-Hands.
M-Hands. It's an epic story. I mean, it doesn't take place in an afternoon or over a couple of days like a normal, like a standard comic would. It's a 7-month span that happens from start to finish in this story. You definitely hard to do that in 20, 22 pages.
How does Conan fit it all in? You know, you know what I mean? Well, like that's
what's so great is that, you know, there's a big, you know, much like Jesus Christ himself.
Wow.
Many years where we didn't know what he was up to. Right. The other famous crucified person.
Please send your emails to Dallin at.
Well, I'm just saying, like, we don't know too much before the age of 30, right? There's a lot of
between
the panels going on there. In the time that it takes Conan to heal up and, you know, get his act together and figure out, you know, how he can put an army together and get his revenge, like, those are other issues of Savage Sword that tell those stories of the adventures he was on, you know, in the middle of this story. So there's no end to what Conan was up to.
He's like Batman, you know, like how many adventures can one guy have? Like, when does he have time to do anything else? For God's sake, he's fighting 17 different crooks every any given month, you know? So, okay. But yeah,
another funny thing about the story that I found out by reading the letters pages in the Savage Swords, you know, after this story, is the lead character, the lead good guy besides Conan. I don't know how you'd pronounce that. Markios, do you think?
That's probably right.
Markios? I don't know. M-A-R-C-I-O-S?
Could be.
That character was originally called in Howard's story, his name was Valeria. But apparently in a later Howard story, there was another character, Valerius. Some people think they might have been the same person, same character. Some people say no. But Roy Thomas decided to change the name to Markios.
Okay.
But they screwed up, and right at the end of the story, they accidentally refer to him as Valerius. Did you catch that?
No, I didn't even notice that.
I guess it's the second to last page, page 54. Conan says, it was already won before I left it, Valerius. And he's speaking to Markios. So they did have a little gaffe in there. They left it in the treasury. And guess what? They left it in the omnibus.
Oh, wow. Really?
I mean, I guess
No.
that stuff, it just becomes historical. You don't want to change it. I think it's better that they don't actually, but.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I didn't even notice that. The names of the, there's so many characters in these things, and there's so many names flying around that, yeah, I kind of was like, I didn't even think about it as
And generally
I
difficult to
remember.
pronounce names.
So again, it's a great use of the Treasury format. You know, they'd already done a bunch of Conan reprint books, so why not give the audience something that they probably, couldn't have seen at this point? Obviously, Savage Sword had been number five had been published a bunch of years earlier. It was off the stands, and
Well,
this is,
I'll put it in perspective for you. When this Treasury came out, Conan the Barbarian regular comic was already on issue 104 that month. So there'd already been over 100 issues of the regular comic. Savage Sword of Conan number 45 came out the same day as this Treasury.
okay.
The famous Pegasus Project storyline in Marvel 2-in-1 was close
Yes.
to wrapping up. Number 57 came out that day. And the same, just to put this in perspective, mind you, for the listeners, I know you know this, but the exact same month that this Treasury was released was the same month that we got Richie Rich number 184. Richie Rich and Casper 31, Richie Rich and Gloria number 11, Richie Rich and his girlfriends number 2, Richie Rich and Jackie Jokers number 35, Richie Rich and Cadbury number 10, Richie Rich and his mean cousin Reggie number 2, Richie Rich Best of the Years number 4, Richie Rich Billions 33, Richie Rich Cash 32, Richie Rich Dollars and Cents number 94, Richie Rich Fortunes number 49. Richie Rich Gems number 48, Richie
Dear
Rich Gold and Silver
God.
number 27, Richie Rich Inventions number 11, Richie Rich Money World number 43, Richie Rich Riches number 45, Richie Rich Success Stories number 9,
No, this can't be right.
and Richie Rich Vaults of Mystery number 31. Just so
My
our
God.
listeners know, they can get a just a a general sense of the time period.
I mean, first of
Same
all,
month.
that is stunning. That is simple. Paul Keen and Sean Myers from Batman Family Reunion will be happy to hear that. There's sometimes when I hear those statistics, right? And it's not that I don't believe Mike's Amazing World, because that site has proven to be very sharp. But I hear how many Richie Rich titles they publish in a given month, and I'm like, was Richie Rich, or was Harvey Comics like a front for the mob? Was it like a money laundering
Possibly.
operation? Because who was
Possibly.
buying that many Richie Rich comics? Who really? Were there that many
They're
kids
just
out
getting
there?
funneled into doctor's offices, I
I
think.
guess
I don't
so. I
know. I
guess
don't
so.
know.
Do you think, Dallin, that there was a single child in all of America that bought Savage Sword of Conan number 45 and any Richie Rich comic the same month? Do you think that was the same, any one kid that did that?
That's a really good question.
I would bet not. Or maybe they bought it. It was an older brother, and he bought it, Savage Sword, for himself, and then bought Richie Rich, whatever, Richie
Just having
Rich
them in the same
Billions.
house, yeah, and
Yeah,
reading them
for his
both in
little
the same
brother or
day.
something. That is stunning. And yet, no Richie Rich Treasury Edition, right? Marv
No,
Harvey
no.
never got into that. You would think
But
if they were selling that many
it
Richie Rich comics, you would put them in a treasury because you know it's going to sell.
is kind of funny though how we celebrate certain things like, wow, they, Savage Sword came out for years, and Conan was already past issue 100, and then you think. Think about all those Richie Rich titles that all came out in the same
He had
month.
more titles than Spider-Man, Batman, Superman, and Conan combined. in any given month. So yeah, that's
I
that is
couldn't help
stunning.
myself.
That
I
is,
couldn't help myself.
somebody should do a Richie Rich podcast. I'm not going to be the one to do it, but somebody should absolutely do so. Okay. So we got to get back to Conan here a little bit. So after that story, there's a bonus feature where there's a 2-page map, the travels of Conan and Bilitt, and Roy Thomas details all the various places that they went. When you were a kid, was this the kind of thing you would read, this kind of text-heavy piece, or did you kind of just glance at it and move on?
Even at my age, I'm glancing and moving on this one. I think that this may be the only thing in this, now I could be wrong, but I think this map might be the only thing in this treasury that's original to this treasury.
Yeah, I
I don't
think, yeah, it could
know,
be.
but this map is confusing, and especially since it's, cut down the middle, it's hard to, it's not the easiest map to decipher.
Yeah, actually, I don't know how you would even read it at a comic book size, because it would be just reduced. The text would have to be reduced so small that it would probably be really difficult to read. I mean, it's already really hard to read, even at a treasury
Yeah.
size. It's a little hard to read to with these aged eyes that I've got
It's
here.
fine that they did it. And the interesting thing too is that this is more of a callback to the monthly single issues because it's all about his travels with Belit, which is interesting, right? Because there's no Belit in this treasury, but they would cross-pollinate and try to promote each other here and there. So makes sense.
After that, there is a cornucopia of Conan, which are 5 pinups. Some of them are credit, or some of them are signed by the artists. Most are not. I don't, they look a little, I don't want to say unprofessional because that's too harsh, but some of them look a little more amateur than others. And I makes me wonder if these were done just as kind of like a test piece for some people to see what they could do versus, getting necessarily like a big time professional. Because some of them I don't recognize the style at all, and some of them aren't even signed, so I don't, and they're not credited on the inside cover, and there's not credited on Mike's Amazing World, so I actually don't even know who drew some of these.
There were some credits that I found in the omnibus, the Savage Sword of Conan omnibus, Volume 1. But the I just for just so you know, I have the omnibus that collects Savage Tales and the first 12 issues of Savage Sword, which obviously includes this tale. I do not have any of the further 7 or 8 or nine volumes, but. These I did find all these pinups. These all appear in within a few issues after Savage Sword number 5. And they had a lot of pages to fill. So this first one, which I'm sure you were laughing about this too. It looks like the artist signed it, but there is no way you can read that signature.
No, you get it's
And
indecipherable.
that's one in particular that I could not figure out. I couldn't find a credit anywhere. That was just the illustration that accompanied the beginning of an article in Savage Sword number 6, I believe. The next page, Vincent Alcazar.
Alcazar, he's the only one whose name you could
Yeah,
clearly
this was
spell
a
out.
frontispiece in Savage Sword number 7. And then when you turn the page, that's Gray Morrow, right? There is a signature down there where he's holding the red head.
I don't think it's Gray Morrow, right?
Well, I know one of them. I
It
think one of
looks a
them
little
might
like
be.
his signature, but it just, that just, I don't know. That doesn't look like Gray Morrow to
That was
me.
another frontispiece. I think the rest of them were the final one. It has his strange initials. That's Tim Conrad, where he's holding the bow and the arrow on page 62. I did find all. I think I well, I didn't write them all down, but I did find all but that first one. There's no way to read that signature. It's just a strange signature.
Yeah,
I
it's
thought
just
somebody
like
had scribbled on the page with a Sharpie.
it's like a doctor's
Because
signature.
the copy that I have of this treasury, the very opening splash, whoever owned it before scribbled with pencil. So I thought, oh, they got on there with a marker and they didn't like that artist's name. So they but no, it's illegible. But yeah,
Once
none of these are jaw-dropping, I don't think.
Yeah.
Not.
Actually, now that you've told me that a lot of them are like front pieces, now that makes a lot of sense, because
Yeah.
they have kind of a weird, there's a lot of like dead space on them. Like Conan is kind of in the bottom, or but now that you tell me that they're meant to have room for text, like a table of contents, that makes sense. So, okay, all right, that makes total sense that that's what they
Well,
are.
generally the table of contents was on the facing page of the frontispiece.
Oh, you mean
Usually there
that front? You
wasn't.
mean that front? Okay, not the inner cover, but like the
Inside
first
cover.
page. I gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
But they were in black and white, and now they colored them with mixed results, and
Right.
it's okay.
Yeah. And then so the final feature is a run of the Conan the Barbarian comic strip, which ran from September 1978 to May of 1981. It's kind of ironic that the Conan comic strip died just about 6 months before the movie came out. You would think that they would have found a way to stretch it out. I never saw the Conan comic strip as a kid. It never ran in I grew up in the Philadelphia area. We had a bunch of newspapers. I never saw it in a single newspaper because I would have enjoyed it because it looked just like the comic. Again, drawn by John Buscema. Once again, like, how the hell is this guy cranking this stuff out? And it
He
features
wasn't
it.
on it too long, but
No, he wasn't on it all the way, but still, I mean, from what I've always heard about newspaper strips, that's a backbreaking job, like just cranking that out every single day. And that's hard enough for people who do like humor strips, where it's kind of like the drawing's a lot more simple, but he's bringing it here. I mean, it looks
Even
like
if
the
you don't have
comic
to
book.
write it.
Yeah, totally.
Even if
I
you're
mean,
not
again,
writing it, that's still some work.
I mean, he's and Conan is, he meets again, he meets like another comely lass, and he fights an evil wizard, and he fights various monsters. And it's kind of funny. I find that reading a comic strip in long form is kind of not the way it's meant to be read. Obviously, it's meant to be read interstitials every day because you each strip is recap, move the story forward, cliffhanger,
An inch,
recap. That's the way it's supposed to. And so if you read one after the other, it feels repetitive because, but it's not to be read that way. But to me, it works because Conan's adventures are so kind of bifurcated like that. They are just like da 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 da. Like that's kind of the way it works. So to me, it worked really quite well, and it reprints some of the Sundays as well. So I really enjoyed this. I wish that they had done more of this. I know that there are collections of the Conan comic strips, but I really appreciated that they did this. I thought this was another really fun bonus feature for this treasury.
I totally agree. I didn't have this treasury as a kid when it came out. I've only had it for I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years, something like that. But when I first got it, I read everything except the newspaper strips. And I don't know, I don't think I ever did read through them. I wasn't really looking forward to it. I glanced at the art, but like you said, there's a lot of, some things aren't meant to be unserialized. Some things read better in trade, some things don't. These are definitely meant to be drawn out over a period of time. And I wasn't that excited about actually reading it. And then I got totally caught up in it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Way more than I thought I would. I mean, the art is, John Buscema's art's always going to carry just about anything, but
It's top notch.
I enjoyed it far more than I expected to.
They title it The Sword and the Sorcerer, and it even features like a little origin sequence that they said that they ran at the beginning of the strip so people would know. There's the You've got this great little gag of Conan's adventures continue in the Register and Tribune daily comic strip, and Conan's pointing at you, like he's doing an Uncle Sam kind of bit. I thoroughly, as much as I enjoyed the first story, I really enjoyed this comic strip segment, and it makes me kind of want to go and find the collection because this is probably pretty. And again, as you mentioned, they weren't all drawn by Buscema, and the strip didn't
No,
really
but they
run that
didn't get any
long.
slouches. They didn't get any slouches to come on board. They had Ernie Chan and Rudy Nebrus and Alcala. Like they didn't, they definitely wanted to put their best foot forward. I mean, national advertising like that. So
I'm trying to imagine what
they're
Alfredo
solid.
Alcala's work would have looked like shrunk down that small. He had such intricate line work. Like, how did that even reproduce? What did that look like? Just a bunch of ink globbing, inks of globs of ink, you know? I mean, good
He probably
Lord.
had to switch it up a little, that's for sure.
Yeah, my goodness. Speaking of which, Ernie Chan slash Chua provides a pinup in the last page of the thing where he Conan has thwarted this sort of pterodactyl type creature, and that looks great. I mean, you know, Ernie
I
know
don't
how to
know.
do Conan.
That one I didn't find. I don't know where that's from or if it's original to this. It might be. But
Yeah, yeah.
it could have just eluded my first Savage Sword omnibus.
Yeah, right. They might have just had him because he was doing work for Marvel all the time back then. So they might have just had him just polish this off. What the hell? And then on the inside, there is an ad for Conan the Barbarian and Savage Sword of Conan. Conan fighting a snake. So yeah, like, okay, you know, you like these, then go out and get those. And then on the back cover is a the representation of the big story beat, which is Conan being crucified. And it features one of the few times I can ever think of where Conan looks scared. I can't, you don't see that a lot. Even when he is facing certain death, he always looks grim, but not scared. But here he looks absolutely terrified, which is upsetting because we're not used to
I
seeing Conan look
no, I'm
like
not.
that.
No, I'm not. No, I can't buy it.
You don't think he'd look
No,
like that?
I don't think he's scared. I think he's hungover.
Really?
I think he's hungover.
Okay. All right. I think he looks
No,
scared. Well, all right, everybody.
I'm just trying to give Conan the benefit of the doubt here. But
Okay. Well,
I mean, they
everybody,
did
check out
say
the.
early in the story that the night before this crucifixion, he was drinking heavily. It's mentioned in the story. They say off duty and drunk the night before. So I'm not going to say scared. I'm just going to say he's got the sweats there. He's just
Okay. All right. Well, everybody listening to this, go check out the gallery page and it'll feature the back cover to this book. And you let me know whether you think I'm right or whether you think Dallin is right. And don't let the fact that I'm the host of the show in any way sway your opinion about that. But overall, it's a really, really good collection. I think Marvel's batting average in these things was usually really quite good. And I like it when they used this format to present something that you couldn't just get normally. I mean, I like the best of collections as well, but they had already done it like four Conan treasures at this point. So let's do something a little different.
This
Let's pull
what
something from
now
the
is
magazine and the comic strip. That's great.
were there four?
I think so.
I was
There's.
thinking that I could be wrong. I was thinking there were three, but you might be right.
There was at least four. There might be one after this. I'm trying to remember, I mean, you
You
know.
covered the first Conan
Yeah,
Treasury on
the
your
right, the
show.
Barry, the Red Nails, Barry Windsor
And the
Smith.
reason that I chose this one as opposed to an earlier Conan Treasury was that this one is the only Conan Treasury that I know of that doesn't feature artwork by that hack, Barry Windsor Smith. This is all Buscema all the time. No, of course I'm kidding. Barry Windsor is awesome, but I definitely Buscema's art speaks to me more than his. So this is all Buscema, baby.
Yeah, there were in fact four Conan treasuries. The Marvel Treasury Edition number 4, number 15, number 19, and 23.
Okay.
And this is the
Okay.
last one. This is the
And they
last of
had,
the treasury.
was Red Sonja on the cover of both of the middle two?
She's on the cover of number 15. In number
Okay.
19, he's wrestling the bear or the
Oh,
giant ape,
yes. That's the
the
one I
ape
wasn't,
creature. Yeah. And then you've
yes.
got this one. So this is the last one they would do. Again, damn shame that when it came time to do the movie adaptation, the Treasuries Marvel had gotten rid of the treasury because this would have been awesome as a movie special, a movie Treasury edition. But instead, you know, we got it as a 2-issue miniseries and as a Marvel super
Magazine,
special, Marvel
right?
magazine, but no treasury.
Yeah.
But that's a shame. But
Yeah.
yeah, no, it's a really great book. It's a really fun. I love the comic strip stuff. I love the story from Savage Sword. It's just a really great book.
It really is. Yeah, I appreciate you letting me choose it and talk about it. It's, I mean, you know, go big or go home, but you can't get
Absolutely.
much bigger than Conan on a cross.
Absolutely. Yeah, can't beat it. Drunk or afraid, depending on your point of view. Well, Dallin, thank you so much for coming back. I really appreciate it. I think it shows the diversity of your Marvel Comics reading that we covered Defenders and then Howard the Duck and now Conan the Barbarian, kind of, a little bit
Well, I
all
don't know
over the
about
place there.
diversity. Since I'm probably not going to pick a DC treasury, that probably wouldn't happen. But within the Marvel universe,
Within the
I
Marvel
guess
Universe.
a little bit of diversity there.
I appreciate that. Well, why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
I'm still on Twitter. You heard me. Twitter. At Dallin B. That's mostly where I talk comics. So
All
that's where
right.
I like to find fun comic posts and hopefully contribute fun comic posts. So look me up.
I will tell you, if I had unlimited time to just do nothing but podcasting, I didn't have to work, I didn't have to do, I would do a podcast about like the Marvel black and white magazines because I love that line. I just thought that was,
Oh, so good.
there was so much good material. And it was just such a unique, like Marvel just jumped into the pool, not even neck deep, like eyebrow deep.
Yeah.
They went from, as I mentioned at the beginning, they had no black and white titles. And then like when Marv Wolfman was editor in chief, when back when like there was somebody different every 6 months running Marvel as the editor in chief,
Yeah.
they like went to Marv Wolfman and they were like, hey, you're going to produce, seven black and white monthly magazines, and they're all going to be 60 pages of material. Get going on that. Like, oh my God.
I know. And the quality, it isn't just, the Savage Swords that I've been picking up. I've got an LCS that usually, will throw them. I can get them for about $3 an issue,
That's a good deal.
and it's less common for the other titles to show up, but when they do, I just grab them, no questions asked, because the quality is so high. And even for Savage Sword, for as long as it ran, the worst issue that I've ever read was still pretty darn wonderful. They just got some of the best artists, and you're seeing them in black and white. I may not have appreciated it as much when I was a kid. And like you said, they were harder to find as a kid, but now the black and white really speaks to me. To see those lines, it's glorious.
Oh, it's amazing stuff. I mean, beautiful painted covers, and you realize again that even in one magazine, a lot of times you're having three, four stories. So you're dealing with three or four sets of creative people, three or four writers, three or four artists, three or four sets of deadlines you got to keep track of.
Yeah.
It was just a Herculean labor that Marvel put into these things. And it was kind of funny because I mean, again, we're kind of turning this episode into the black and white magazine podcast, but like. You
Episode
think,
one.
yeah, I mean, you think that Marvel really had that. I mean, there was Warren, of course, but like DC never got into it. DC,
No.
oh, they left. And I think we've talked about this. I mean, I think Chris Franklin and I maybe even covered it on an episode of one of our shows we've done together. But you think about had DC done that, had DC looked at what Marvel was doing and said, we got to get in on this. Could you imagine of what like a black and white Batman magazine might have looked like? That would have been
Oh, yeah.
unbelievable, or like a House of Mystery, that would have
Oh
been
yeah.
killer. But Marvel kind of had the corner of the market for the longest time.
The
And so,
and it and that almost didn't even happen. There were a lot of things that had to kind of shift. And I don't know why completely why that era died out as quickly as it did. Kind of went as quick as it came, there was, when I was maybe 13, I remember snagging a copy of Heavy Metal off that magazine rack, and taking it up to the counter, and I wasn't sure if he was going to let me buy it or not. But I rarely saw the Marvel ones. I finally, snagged a black and white Marvel preview. I think that was what it was called, with Thor on the cover. So I thought that was pretty safe, but that was a little different than, some of these. The Savage Sword and the vampire titles and monster titles. Good stuff.
Good stuff. Absolutely good stuff. So, like I said, I wish there was a black and white, a Marvel black and white magazine podcast or a Warren podcast. Like maybe there is, but every so often I've looked for one and I don't find one. I found podcasts to do like a one episode, but not one that's devoted to it. But again, part of it was just the labor of like, if you're going to review a random Marvel magazine, you're writing 4 or 5 synopses, you know, you're doing like, it's a lot of work to even talk about them. So maybe that's why they don't exist, but they deserve it because they are an undervalued corner of the Marvel publishing empire. Yeah. So.
And every now and then you come across that article that's reviewing, you know, the latest paperbacks of the time. You know, some of that would be a little bit of a slog nowadays.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But, you know, who knows? Maybe one day. So anyway, Dallin, thank you so much for coming back. I really appreciate it. It's always fun talking to you. So thanks for coming back on the show.
Rob, you're still doing God's work. I really appreciate the invite.
Okay. I'm doing Crom's work.
Will you do me a favor? You're doing Crom's. That's right. You're doing Crom's work this week.
Mm-hmm.
Will you do me a favor?
Sure.
Will you do me a favor right now in front of however many people are listening, the hundreds of thousands of listeners?
Yeah.
Do me a favor. Just promise me one thing, that you will never stop doing Treasury Cast.
I hate you so much, Dallin.
Will you please? I mean, it would mean so much to me and everyone else that listens to this show. If you,
you
could
are,
just,
you're a terrible person.
That's
and I'm
too much.
I regret that I invited you on.
Oh no! Oh no! Oh, it's awful. Oh, I thought it was such a small favor to ask.
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh my, you're terrible. You're just a terrible person. Lord have pity on your wife and children. So, and all your bandmates, all the people you play with
over here.
Oh yeah. Well, you should be afraid. Like Conan looks like in the back cover of the magazine. Well, anyway, we're going to end this right now. Thank you everybody for listening. Stay tuned. I'm going to run some promos. And when I come back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
Adventures into the unknown.
Tales from the crypt.
Skeleton hand.
The haunt of fear.
Dark shadows.
Vampirella.
The haunted tank.
The heap.
Eerie.
Swamp Thing.
Weird mysteries.
Tomb of Dracula.
Tales of the unexpected.
Werewolf by night.
The demon.
Man Thing.
Monster of Frankenstein.
Brother Voodoo.
The son of Satan.
Night Force.
The living mummy.
The Sandman.
Tomb of Darkness.
Evil Ernie.
Saga of the Swamp Thing.
Flinch.
Hellblazer.
30 Days of Night.
Preacher.
The Walking Dead.
What do these titles have in common? All of them. From Adventures into the Unknown, to Tales from the Crypt, to The House of Mystery, to The Tomb of Dracula, may be found in the Long Box of Darkness. I'm your host, Herman Lowe. Join me every Monday night for a journey into comic book horror as we delve into the secrets of the Long Box of Darkness.
So listen if you dare, puny mortals, to the Long Box of Darkness, available on Stitcher, iTunes, and Podbean. And check out the blog at www.longboxofdarkness.com. Good night, and pleasant screams.
Hi, Dr. Fernsteiner. Hello, Paul. How are you doing these days?
I'm good. Since you, cured me of my DC OCD, I've got so much more time on my hands. It's been for the best.
Well, personally and professionally, I'm quite proud of what we have achieved, but I have some bad news for you, Paul.
What?
There's something missing without your DC OCD there.
Oh.
I've even heard friends of yours been saying you're basic. A little boring. There's no there.
Well, what should we do about it?
My God, I hate to have to say this, but we have to go bring it back somehow.
Whoa. Shall we do some more sessions and I can use them to talk about DC events that we haven't covered, like Dark Crisis and Fear State, those sorts of things?
I think that might be for the best, Paul. Let's reconvene in 2024 for more sessions of DC OCD.
And that'll make me interesting?
We will see, Paul. We will see.
And it's time for listener feedback, and these are the comments we got on Treasury Cast number 87. The Rudolph Palooza with Bully the Little Stuff Bull and his assistant, John. First up, we got comments from Brian Chufo, who says, I got a chuckle out of a misname that I do all the time about an actor who was in classic movies such as Dr. Strangelove, Blazing Saddles, and nearly every TV show in the 60s and 70s, including the MASH spinoff PJ and the Bear. Slim Whitman, the iconic singer we all know from the best-selling KTEL record commercials in the 60s. Oops, I mean Walt Whitman. Oops, I mean those Whitman samplers. It took me years to realize that they were three different people and also had no connection to a box of chocolates. But seriously, Slim Pickens is one of the iconic actors you immediately recognize with his distinct look and voice, even though it's hard to match his name to his face. You know, Brian, when you wrote that, I had no idea what you were talking about. And then I realized that I said Slim Whitman when I meant to say Slim Pickens. Of course, Slim Whitman was not in Dr. Strangelove and did not write the bomb down. That was, yes, Slim Pickens. So thank you for pointing that out. I had no idea that I did. Just rolls right off the tongue. Slim Whitman. It's not Slim Whitman. Slim Pickens. Anyway, Super Captain says, now I am wanting a special treasury edition featuring the further adventures of Rudolph and Co. in the archipelago of last year's from Rankin-Bass New Year's special. And thank you for the dedication to Mike of Mike's Amazing World. Sad to hear of his passing, but glad that his work will continue. Pretty much anyone who does a comic book podcast owes something to Mike of Mike's Amazing World. It's just it was and continues to be an invaluable resource. Edo Boznar says, a Christmas Treasury Cast without Chris Franklin? Isn't that against the law or something? Even though I liked your guests, Bully and John, although I think you grown-ups are kind of mean, sending Bully to bed right away, I'm sure he would have had some wonderful insights into Rudolph. By the way, the page in your gallery showing the map of Rudolph and Grover's search for the missing reindeer reminds me of those Family Circus dotted line comics. Yeah, I thought that too, the whole like not me deal, very similar to that. Siskoid from this network says, John and Bully basically came up with us in the blogging world, and the site was one of my daily pleasures, as was the Aquaman Shrine. Thanks, Siskoid. So it was a real treat to hear him on a podcast. Thanks. Yeah, it was. It was great. Super fun to talk to John and Bully. Rob McCarthy says, Rob, of course Superman Treasuries outsold Batman's because Batman's uber popularity comes with the direct market in the 1980s. A lot of kids would have only known Batman from Super Friends. I'm powerless without my belt. Nobody liked that guy. Chris Franklin from our network counters. He says, you forget the mega success of Batmania in 1966, only rivaled by Beatlemania and Bondmania in that decade, just a few years before this. Plus the perpetual reruns of the show that spawned it. Batman is still selling tons of merch off the gas in that Batmobile. Yeah, I got to agree with Chris here. Of course I would, because he knows better than any of us. But yeah, I mean, Superman was still the main draw from DC Comics even into the 70s, but Batman was no slouch. There's a reason why he had, five or six titles along with Superman. Bradley Glenn says, I think a large reason the Superman Raw/Genie Treasuries outsold the Batman Treasury was the fact that the Superman one came out first and had the advantage of exciting readers with the new large format. I remember DC's marketing push. They made a big deal. But actually, I was working at a book distributor when that Superman came out, and I even made efforts to plug it in like the company newsletter. I was so excited about it. So yeah, I was I helped out in my own small way. Phil Brown says, fun episode. Great way to handle these Rudolph books. I don't think doing full episodes in depth discussion of every single one of these would have been worth it. But you got to honor Rudolph on the Treasury Cast. He was the original star of the DC Treasuries, for better or worse. This was a great episode to give the red-nosed guy his due. I'd also never heard of the canceled Marvel Godzilla Treasury, and it hurts to know that it could have happened but never did. I always thought that the Marvel Godzilla series was underrated. If I were to hazard a guess as to why it didn't happen, it was likely because Marvel only licensed the Big G for Toho and not the other monsters. Fine for the main series, but doing that adaptation would require all the rights to all the other classic Toho monsters, and I'll bet the two companies weren't able to work out a deal. However, I do have some good news for you. There is a Godzilla Treasury. IDW published one. It's a compilation of reprinted issues and art by James Stokoe, and his hyper-detailed images look incredible in the oversized format. I keep it on my shelf next to the Godzilla Treasury. I recommend that you do the same. I did not know that. Thank you, Phil. I will have to check that out. I know IDW did a bunch of great treasures. We've covered a few of them, but I didn't know about that one. And Martin Gray says, in other news, count me as another thrilled by the surprise appearance of John and Bully. I love John. I do hope Bully slept well. It's interesting that Rob mentions that both Rudolph and Superman headlined 7 treasures each, but did Rudolph ever tomahawk his loyal readers? I agree that a story going round and round on the page is one of the wonderful things comic books can do that other mediums can't. How I hate it, having to turn the pages round and round. It's even more annoying on digital if you get to engage the rotation lock. Anyway, great show. I love the discussion, and you have me wanting to read the issues. Thank you, Martin. Bucky749 says, great show. I was listening to your some of your back catalog from the show, and I especially enjoyed the Dick Tracy episode. And I wondered if you ever watched the movie Dick Tracy Meets Cue Ball and Dick Tracy Meets Gruesome. Thank you, Bucky. I have seen some of the Dick Tracy movies. I honestly don't remember which ones I've seen. They kind of all blend together. Some of them were kind of fun. I love the Warren Beatty movie. Paul Kian from this very network says, awesome episode about 6 treasuries I will never read. Put me in the Christmas spirit. It's honest of you, Paul. Chris Franken comes back to say, glad to hear Rudolph get his due. As someone who guessed on most of the previous Christmas episodes of the show, I too apologize for taking any pot shots at Rudolph. As John and Bully pointed out, comics should be fun, and these are. I'm a big fan of the song and ostensibly the Rankin Bass special, though Santa is a real SOB in that one, and the other reindeer, minus Clarice, suck. I have never much had the opportunity to read the DC Rudolph material, but I have a strange little Rudolph ornament that looks like a micro children's storybook and reprints some material from the DC Rudolph series, giving DC full credit. Rudolph mastered many formats in his time at DC. That's amazing, Chris. I never knew that existed. Robert J. Smith says, I know I had a couple of these when I was single digit years old. I haven't given them a single thought since the 70s, but once you started talking about them, I remembered the stories in detail. Many episodes of Treasure Cast and Batman Family Reunion functioned like a time machine, taking back decades and unearthing memories I didn't even know I had. Thanks. Thank you, Robert. And then finally, Brett Young says, great show, guys. I was an early fan of Rudolph ever since it occurred to me what a dick Santa was to him in the animated special. I never read the Treasuries or Digest, but I wish they'd kept going. Considering the Treasury trends at the time, I'm sure Rudolph versus Superman was right around the corner. Then maybe a dark story called Rudy in the 80s, Rudolph with a small head and large guns in the 90s, then topped off with Brad Meltzer's Rudolph Meets Dr. Light. Okay, maybe it's better that they ended when they did. You're a wise man, Brett. So thanks so much for the feedback, everybody. And a big thanks to Dallin Bumgarten for coming by and talking Conan with me. It's always fun to discuss with him. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of our show on the website, FineWaterPodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. You can follow the show on Twitter at Treasury Comics. And if you want to support the Finewater Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Jeff Pollier, Brett Young, and Mark Bulbus for their support of Treasury Cast. I really do appreciate it. So you might have wondered what the grim laughing was at Dallin's instruction to me or request to me at the end of the previous segment that I, quote unquote, never end Treasury Cast. Well, Dallin was just Dallin is being down, everybody. I am here to announce that with this episode, number 88, this will be the final year of Treasury Cast. When I started the show in 2016, I had absolutely no clue of how long it was going to go. I hadn't really thought about it. I was just so in love with the podcasting medium, you know, and the fact that we had just built the network and it allowed us to create whatever shows we wanted to create. It gave us room, both literally and figuratively, creatively, but also just the physical kind of calendar space to create whatever shows we all wanted, that I just was creating shows left and right for every single thing that I enjoyed, whether it was Super Friends or Bob Dylan or movies or Treasury Comics. And so I set all these shows in motion with varying schedules, and I didn't really think about it. I just started rolling. I love the Treasury, especially the DC and Marvel ones of the 70s and the early 80s. And I wanted to cover them all at a certain point, but I hadn't really thought about it. Well, it's dawned on me now that, again, as of we're episode 88 here, with one more year, Treasury Cast will hit 100 episodes. And I think that is a good time to call it a day. Even with 11 more episodes to go, we will not have the opportunity to cover every single of the remaining Marvel and DC treasuries, but I'm going to get close, especially since I want to work in looks at some of the other Alex Ross, Paul Dini books that we still haven't gotten to. But we're going to get close, and that's going to be good enough. I just realized that I feel like the show it's a lot of work, and I appreciate everyone who's been listening to it all these years and all the feedback we get, and everything's great. But I just think it's time to just kind of put a bow on the show. And I feel like 100 episodes is really the perfect time to do that. And so I had mentioned my intentions to Down, which is one of the ways I was trying to entice him to get him back on the show. And he oh so impishly decided to tip you all off with that joke there, which I decided to leave in the episode. So this is going to be the final year. I was initially thinking maybe I wouldn't mention it so early because I don't want to seem like I'm sort of drawing the funereal shroud over the show a full year early. But I also just thought, well, it gives everyone a kind of, know that we are heading into our final year, and it'll let you all know that, I do have sort of the year's worth of shows sort of planned out. If there's things that we don't get to, it's not because I've forgotten about them. It's because it's sort of intentional that I've made choices about which guests I can get, how I want to stagger this final year, and how I want to wrap things up. So I hope you all stick with me for the ride. We're going to have a lot of really fun conversations about a bunch of great comic books in the next year. And so, like I said, thank you all for listening. I really appreciate it. So yeah, this will be the our final valedictory year here at Treasury Cast, which as long as I don't get to have to miss a month, I'm hoping I don't. The show will end with number 100, which will be the January 2025. Wow, 2025 episode. So that is going to do it, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Again, big thanks to Down, except for that one moment. I really appreciated him coming back on the show. We will see you next month. But until then, go big or go home.
Conan, what is best in life?
To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of their women.
That is good.